and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I am your host, as always, Stephen Murphy, joined here by Johnny Byrne of the Atlantic Sports Podcast. Johnny, thanks again for joining us. We're talking about some NBA basketball again. So how are you, Johnny?
Good. I'm starting to become the highlight of kind of the biannual now podcast we're doing about NBA.
Yeah, I know.
So I think I'm going to miss it when basketball is finished. But no, it's great to be on, Stephen, and thanks for having me again.
No problem, man. It's always good to chat hoops with you. So again, we can't really talk about NBA at the moment without talking about the Clippers and, you know, the Battle of LA that wasn't or that never happened. I don't know where to really start here. I don't know how you feel about it, but and you can tell by the general public, obviously Clippers losing to the Denver Nuggets in Game 7 a few days ago. No one seems to have much sympathy for the Clippers, which is shocking after they were so humble and didn't talk any shit to anyone over the last few months. And talk about a collapse. Like, I watched the highlights, obviously didn't watch the game because it's too late, so I watched the highlights. That fourth quarter is a shambles in that Game 7. Like, they... Mm-hmm. Looked frightened. They didn't look like they wanted to be there. They looked like they didn't want to take shots. Like, Kawhi had to take plenty of shots, but they were terrible shots. They were like coming out like Paul George's three that hit the side of the backboard. We'll talk about Paul George in a bit, but this was one of the all-time collapses. Being up 3-1 is one thing, but we've seen 3-1 like collapses before, but not like this. This team quit in that fourth quarter. They just gave up. And we've never seen that before. As far as I can tell, we've never seen that before. The Warriors, when they lost to the Cavs 3-1, Game 7 was, you know, it was a one-shot game. It was an amazing play by Kyrie that won that game. The Warriors didn't quit. You know, Steph Curry made an incredible defensive play on that Kyrie shot. He was very close to blocking it. They didn't roll over like this Clippers team did. And it's just, it's a weird situation. But what was your kind of initial thoughts again when you woke up and saw the result?
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. We don't tend to really stay up for these games, especially the Western Conference ones that are on a bit later. So I woke up the next day, and this was after the first Heat-Celtics game and obviously the seventh game between the Nuggets and the Clippers. And I was trying to avoid the result of Heat-Celtics just to be able to watch the highlights back. And, you know, it's impossible not to be scrolling through your news feed in this day and age as a millennial. I was on Instagram, I was on Twitter, I was on everything. I didn't see one thing about Heat Celtics game one. It was all, you know, complete shock from people on what the Nuggets carried out in this game. And I think, you know, if you're looking at it overall, you know, initial reaction is obviously surprise because, you know, this is the only time in playoff history I think a team has come back from 2-3-1 deficits. And to do it in a row is pretty incredible. But I think, you know, again, without just blaring out the kind of obvious words of shock and surprise, you know, you're right in saying the performance there was lackluster from the Clippers. And I really think a lot of people felt that the Clippers would take this leap going into the playoffs because they had, of course, you know, Kawhi Leonard. And it just didn't happen this year. There's something about it. Maybe it was Orlando. Maybe it was the fact that this team didn't have enough time to gel. There was obviously injuries at play during the season to Paul George and some other players on the roster. There was the issues when they came to Orlando with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell didn't get that much game time. And I feel like that the tandem of Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, I mean, they took two games off Golden State last year alone, and that's without Kawhi and Paul George. So there's a load of factors here to really talk about, Stephen. Where would you look at, or is there anything you point a finger at when in terms of the Clippers?
I totally agree with you. They have some built-in excuses. It's a weird NBA season. Orlando, it's in a bubble. They didn't have home court advantage like they would have if this was normal playoffs against the Nuggets. It's just weird. Like, it's, as you said, there's so many ways you could look at it. It's just weird. Like, how do you get 3-1 up and, like, in game 4 or game 5 and 6, you go up double digits and just lose 3 games in a row? Like, I'm looking at the stats here. Like, Kawhi, 6 from 22 from the field, 2 from 7 from 3 points, a plus minus of minus 21. Paul George, 4 from 6 from the field, 2-11 from 3 points, only 10 points total scored and a plus minus of minus 20. Like, I seen a great tweet, is the Clippers traded 5 first round picks to get Paul George and he only had 4 field goals in that game. There was, it was like one more trade, basically one more pick traded than actual field goals. And like even Lou Williams, who normally kind of bails Paul George and Kawhi out sometimes, if that's the case, he goes 3 from 11 from the field for 7 points and a plus minus of minus eight. It was, and again, I keep bringing it back to this. I think we talked about it in the last podcast, but who's the leader of this Clippers team? Who is the, like, everyone keeps saying it's Kawhi, but when Kawhi isn't hitting shots, he's not talking either. He's not doing, he's not saying anything. He's not, we've all seen clips of LeBron with the Lakers and other teams being like, you know, we're built differently and all this sort of stuff. But he talks to his players a lot and, you know, gets them going and demands stuff from them. Paul George is in no space to be doing that because of his performances lately. And I think, I don't know, something's up with Paul George. I don't know if it's an injury. I don't know if it's in his head. I think we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks something that's going on. Because that's just weird. Like, Paul George in OKC was MVP quality. And now he's hitting sides of backboards from 3-point shots. That's not what happens. Do you know what I mean? But again, I don't know if it's Doc Rivers. I basically went through Doc Rivers, his head coaching career with the Clippers. You know, 2014, 57-25 record, second round exit. 2015, 56-26 record in the regular season, second round exit. 2016 goes 53-29, first round exit. 2017, 51-31, first round exit. 2018 misses the playoffs, and then this year obviously shortened season, but goes, 2019, 48-34, first round exit against the Warriors. But again, a spirited performance at least with a very much a team with no superstars. 2020, he gets Kawhi Leonard, who is, by all accounts, the hottest player in the world right now, especially when it comes to the playoffs, coming off that Toronto season. And he gets Paul George with some nice pieces around them. They go 49-23 in the regular season, obviously shortened. But a second-round exit again. I don't know if the Clippers are just cursed at this stage. You know, 50 years they've existed, and they've never met a Western Conference play or finals. That's not even winning a championship. That's just being the top two or three teams, you know, in the actual Western Conference, and you've never achieved it. It's just madness. I don't know if it's time to move on from Doc. I'm not saying Doc isn't a good coach. Doc is a good coach. We know that by looking at his regular season totals here, obviously. But is it a case where there's just too much emotional baggage or too much, you know, scar tissue, as they say, around this whole situation right now? I don't know. What do you think with the Doc situation?
I mean, some of the statistics you read out there were abysmal, you know, and this is, you know, Kawhi Leonard is a finals MVP that basically won a team a championship last year. I mean, the Raptors were a very good team, but Kawhi Leonard was the pinnacle of that team. So, you know, that it's just incredible to look at that. And I'm not sure I would point the finger at the coaching. It's kind of a difficult one, but I mean, the stats don't lie when you mention the kind of discrepancies between regular season and playoffs. I think it can be easy as well to kind of point the finger at kind of the losing team and think, well, this is what they did wrong, as opposed to maybe looking at the Nuggets and being like, well, this is what they did right. Yeah. Which is one thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about the Nuggets obviously after, but you know, I think it's nearly an argument between this playoffs in particular, between, you know, kind of homegrown drafted teams against teams put together by trading, you know, big assets. And you look at a team like the Nuggets, you look at a team like the Heat and the Celtics. I know the Heat traded for Jimmy Butler, but was he a free agent at the time?
Yeah, he wasn't. His reputation at the time wasn't too great.
Yeah, but most of those assets, I mean, Bam Adebayo, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, you know, all draftees. And then you look at the Nuggets side of thing, and like Jokic, second round draft, who else, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, you know, these are all players they've grown from the ground up over the last couple of years, and you could see them kind of slowly ascending as the playoffs went on. And then the Clippers, complete opposite, traded, you know, mid-season for Marcus Morris. They brought in all these wing players and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard as well now. So I don't know, there's kind of a real lack of cohesion when you watch the Clippers play and how they move the ball. I think, you know, a lot of positives towards the Nuggets, and maybe that's where we can transition into. I don't know if you have any thoughts on the Nuggets and how well they did.
Just, yeah, last touch on the Clippers, just like, again, yeah. I think a lot of the reason people are giving them shit is because, as you said, like, Kawhi left a championship winning team. But even before that, fair enough, he left Toronto, whatever, that's fine. But he pushed his way out of San Antonio. Paul George, you know, pushed his way out of Indiana, signs with the Thunder, commits to signing with the Thunder again, re-signing, says he's not going anywhere, and then he leaves to join the Clippers. You know, this is why I think people are giving them shit. You have players like that who the reason they left their teams was to try and, you know, form a super team here in the, with the Clippers. And it's sometimes it's nice to see that not happen, because it's it would be too easy then to do that. The, on the flip side, who's to say, you know, Paul George only has 1 year left on his contract. Who's to say that he won't try and force his way out again? Kawhi might even be look at this being like, okay, you know what, in that fourth quarter, at least I tried. No one else seemed to want it. No one else seemed to have a fight in them. You know, I'm out of here too. There's no telling what's going to happen to Clippers. I would imagine they'll run it back, because the fact that they do have that, you know, that is that situation where, look, at this is a weird season. Next year we might have a bit more cohesion, as you say, and they might go on to win it. But it is fun sometimes, because they became very unlikable, the Clippers. And, like, you know, I don't dislike Paul George, or I didn't dislike Kawhi, but I did dislike them when it came to this, because they were a bit. And then Patrick Beverley, you know, running the mouths when it came, you know, like against the Blazers. And it was great seeing, I don't know if you followed Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum on, like, Twitter and Instagram, but they had a field day. And, you know, and they're absolutely right too. That's what they deserve after doing that. But yeah, enough on the Clippers. I say we could be here all day talking about them, but it'll be interesting to see what happens over the offseason with them, and see if they make any moves or if they just run it back. But yes, credit, as you said, I completely agree. I don't want it to become that the Clippers fecked up. I want this to become Nuggets were absolutely fantastic. But again, I asked the question, how can this team be so good? And they were 3-1 down twice in two consecutive playoff series, and one against a Utah team. It is incredibly strange that it seems to be when their backs are against the wall the most is when they absolutely start playing their best basketball. But I have to highlight, like, Jokic is just incredible. He is single-handedly saving, like, the reputation of big men across the entire league. He only put up 16 points, but 22 rebounds and 13 assists for a triple-double in that Game 7. They doubled him a lot, but he's so patient. And it helps when you're 7 feet tall and can see over everybody. But he's very patient. He doesn't force anything. He waits for the opportunity that presents itself when a pass comes along, finds a shooter, and he's just him and Murray as a two-man game. That is it. When it's working, it's terrifying. But yeah, what are your initial thoughts again on the Nuggets? Like, how can they come back 3-1 twice?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right in starting with Jokic there. I mean, I don't think there's been a more versatile big man in NBA history than Nikola Jokic. Yeah. I mean, when you talk offensively, you know, being able to, you know, work his layups and his awkward layups. I mean, some of the shots that he shoots, I'm sure coaches would be on their back being like, do never shoot that shot. And the form is awful, but for Jokic, it works. And as well, even his three-point shooting in this series has been fantastic and, you know, kind of underrated and slept on by the Clippers defense to allow him to shoot so many threes, because he's been shooting them at some clip as well, I think near 40%, which is incredible. But, you know, I have to start there, obviously. And then you go to Jamal Murray as well, who, you know, I think is a bit of a streaky shooter. And we had this talk about, you know, Jamal Murray and his ceiling and I guess where we stand with him. But, you know, there's no doubting that when Jamal Murray is working his offense and, you know, in his bag, that the Nuggets are pretty unstoppable. And we saw that against the Jazz as well. Even when Donovan Mitchell was kind of, you know, doing the same things, you know, the Nuggets were winning those games. So, you know, that's another thing, the two of them. But I took one note as well. I was really impressed not only by their kind of ball movement and kind of the, when we talked about the lack of cohesion with the Clippers, you could really see that these Nuggets players knew each other well. And this is the same core of a team that we've seen for the last couple of years. Not many changes. They re-signed Paul Millsap when a lot of people said he was a bit too old, and they decided to bring him back just to keep the kind of bones of that team together. And I think that was a risk that has definitely paid off. But I think the big thing for them in this series was their defense. I think they did a really good job double teaming Kawhi. You know, there was so many times where Kawhi would try and run to the basket and put the ball back out for a put back for somebody, you know, at the 3-point line, and there'd be two guys on him, and one guy would be guarding him towards the basket, and the other guy would be on his shoulder ready for that pass. So, I mean, defensively, I think they were brilliant in this series. And, you know, they say, Stephen, defense wins championships. So we'll see how that plays against the Lakers. But yeah, what impressed you about the Nuggets?
Yeah, I totally agree. They look like a team that's been together for a while, because they have been. They know basically how to get done. And Murray, it helps the fact that he's a big guard you know what I mean? So he has the physical strength to not only get to the basket, but when he does get to the basket, he can sort of, you know, lean into someone, push him off, and just have a nice easy layup. But he's also a very good shooter when he's hot. So, and just the threat of like a pick and roll with him and Jokic, it's very hard to defend that, even if you are Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. Like Murray made them look like average defenders at some stages during this series, which is not, especially with Kawhi, that's not an easy feat. And I don't know, his confidence, I think what we see on Game 7 with the Utah series, they definitely shriveled up because, you know, it's not easy playing in a Game 7 in the playoffs. I think his confidence has grown again throughout this series, so I don't think we're going to see him in the Lakers series. I don't think we're going to see him be nervous. He's not going to shy away from anything. If anything, I think he could be, you know, even better. And Jokic doesn't seem to... Who knows? Jokic doesn't even probably know that we're in Orlando in the playoffs. He's probably just chilling. You know what I mean? He's just like, feck it, I'm just playing basketball. You know, he doesn't seem to give a crap or he doesn't seem to get stressed. We see that with a lot of actually the European big men. They just seem to just enjoy playing the game and what happens, happens. But they have some nice pieces, as you said, Gary Harris. They, you know, players who know their roles and are happy to play those roles. And, you know, fairness to the coach as well, he's done a great job with them, as you know, throughout this series and throughout the playoffs. And they have the belief now as well, even if the Lakers go up 2-0, 3-0, 3-1, they're not going to panic because they've been here and done it twice now in consecutive series. So they literally won't be beaten until Lakers win that fourth game. And I still think the Lakers will win, but we can, again, transition into that. But I think my main issue is we all know it's going to be tough to guard LeBron and tough to guard AD, but who's going to be, is the trio of, you know, Anthony Davis, Dwight, JaVale, are they good enough to slow down Jokic enough, in your opinion?
It's a good question. Like, to be honest, I think AD is the primary matchup there, and I've listened to some podcasts where people believe that this is a series where they'd like to see Dwight Howard get more minutes. And he's somebody that hasn't featured much, but I mean, could probably be like-minded when it comes to Jokic. I'm not sure about his perimeter defense, but I don't think I'd be as worried about guarding Jokic. I know this is might not age well, this comment, but I feel like they have enough big men to kind of, you know, work on him, even if there's switches or that. I would be more worried about who's gonna guard Jamal Murray.
Is it Pope?
Yeah, it could be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I haven't really seen him effectively work his defense in the playoffs so far, but you know, he's average enough. But I would probably give more minutes to Alex Caruso in that regard. I really think he has stepped up defensively this season, and in the playoffs has had some really kind of clutch plays and steals on the defensive end. So I'd probably have him do it. But it's an awkward one, isn't it? To kind of think, you know, who's, you'd have to say AD would be the most capable big man defensively for the Lakers. But with Jokic and his outside shooting and his danger in around the basket, you know, he's so versatile that it's hard to know who to put on him.
This is the thing, and it's the same the other way around. Who's gonna guard LeBron, and who's gonna guard AD, especially if, you know, if he plays well in this series. It's some good matchups, and I've seen they've played each other four times in the regular season before the playoffs. Lakers won three and Denver won one of them, but the Lakers three wins, one of them was an overtime win, and none of the wins were by more than 10 points, so they were close games. Denver actually bet them by 24 points in that one game that they won. That was in Denver, so you know, that's quite a home court advantage during the regular season when it was actually in, you know, Denver. So by, and I've seen as well, Murray had some good games. I think he had 28 points, 22 points. You know, he can score against them, and I don't think they fear the Lakers, if that makes sense. Obviously, you're going up against LeBron and AD, but they've never been absolutely battered by them, or they've never been totally trampled by them. So that's going to be in their minds going into this, being like, look, we've never been really beaten by these guys that badly. We're in an amazing run of form. Our confidence is sky high. They're going to fancy this series, I think, a good bit.
Yeah, no, big time. Like, it's, I do wonder, there's a couple of things, like, stamina wise, like, yeah, you know, after playing two game sevens back to back, and the Lakers have had a pretty easy run of things, you know, we've seen how easily they dispatched the Rockets and the Blazers before them. So, you know, is that going to be a factor? Is that going to be an advantage, though? Because they're in the rhythm, obviously, of winning close games and down the stretch coming back, even if they're down, you know, 3-1 in this series now, that won't face them after, you know, winning the last two. So there's kind of that balance as well. I don't know, like, I think it's as good of an opportunity as they'll ever get to get to an NBA Finals here, because, you know, the Lakers, like I've said, that easy run that they've had, you know, they are two tough, tough teams, the Trailblazers and the Rockets in the regular season. But in terms of how they looked in the playoffs, I think were some of the poorer Western Conference playoff teams, you know, just, you know, matchup wise and injuries and stuff like that, especially in the Blazers series. But I don't know, it's one of those things, like, you know, the Lakers have LeBron James, and sometimes it just takes one player to turn a series. So in terms of, you're saying who would guard LeBron James, that's something I've kind of been thinking about. And, you know, I think I'd like to see Michael Porter Jr. get more minutes in this series, possibly have him featuring it. Maybe he's too young. I think Jeremy Grant has been good defensively for the Nuggets. He's long, he can defend well in the perimeter, and I feel like, you know, is he physical enough to defend LeBron? Because you know as well as anyone, Stephen, that if you're banking on one player to run to the basket and get an open layup, it's LeBron James.
It's probably the guy who's 6'8" and 260 pounds. Probably that guy.
Yeah,
I totally agree. And the Lakers, as we've seen in every series so far, have lost the first game, so not quick starters by any means. And after having that much time off, I think that will help as well. The Nuggets, they're going to be much more, game fit. They're obviously fit, the Lakers, but it's been a while since they've last played their game compared to the Nuggets. So if Nuggets can steal that game one, then it's definitely game on here. Just want to make a side note, obviously, you know more than anyone else, Johnny, I'm not a big Houston Rockets fan. So it is great to see them. They're finally dead. D'Antoni has asked to leave, so I think the Rockets era as we know it, I think, is going to be gone, and I for one am quite happy to see it go, but we'll see. They might come back, but yes, again, this series, looking forward to seeing how it unravels, but I think we all would give the Lakers obviously the edge at the moment. I seen a fascinating tweet, actually. It was basically Kobe's fourth ring that he won. He played the Blazers first round, the Rockets second round, and Nuggets in the conference finals, and he won his fourth ring in Orlando against the Magic. So LeBron is kind of, if you believe in destiny or if you believe in fate, that, you know, put all your money on the Lakers basically now. But I will touch as well, Lakers, they are laughing. They cannot believe their luck. They got a Trailblazers team that were pretty much exhausted by the time they got to them. They played a Rockets team that they were always going to beat, because the Rockets are always going to self-destruct. And now, instead of playing the Clippers, which you were, you know, basically waiting all year to play them in the conference finals, they're playing a Nuggets team, which by all means are not a bad team, but they would definitely have selected the Nuggets over the Clippers if they had the choice.
No, dead right. It's just been an easy run for them. Like,
Definitely. They still have to win your games, but by God, they, you know, nicely little path to the conference finals. We'll move to the Eastern Conference now. Obviously, your Boston Celtics are in a tough situation at the moment against the Miami Heat, 2-0 down. Game one, obviously, incredible ending when Bam's one of the greatest playoff blocks I've ever seen. When you revel in the importance of it, the time of the game, the execution. The ball is nearly half in the basket and he somehow just pops it out. He's been incredible. But game two, obviously, was last night. You've seen the highlights. Well, how are you feeling as a Celtics fan going? Are you really worried or are you still confident?
I probably would have to have two approaches now, my journalistic approach and my Celtics approach. But I guess journalistic-wise anyway, you know, I feel like these have been really close games and I would feel that, you know, Boston will have the opportunity to take a game or two, and this game three is going to be super, super important, because, you know, if they fall 3-0 behind, you know, the Heat and their confidence is sky high, and it's going to be hard to turn the series around after that, because they're going to have to win the next four games. So, you know, psychologically it's going to be a tough game for them, but, you know, the first game went to overtime. Jason Tatum, both at the end of the regular period and overtime, had chances to win the game for the Celtics and just wasn't able to get a shot off. And then in this game too, I think their Heat were down something like 16 or 17 points in the third quarter and just mounted a huge, huge comeback. And a number of kind of aspects of this series that have gone well for the Heat, I guess the starting point for me is Goran Dragic. I think Goran Dragic has been incredible. Mm. Goran Dragic looks like a max contract player in this playoffs. It's mental, you know, a real perennial sixth man kind of. You think, oh yeah, you know, we'll stick Goran Dragic in to be a point guard for a team like the Pistons or the Suns, you know, a team that won't get to the playoffs, but he'll be, you know, he'll put up 20 points a game and, you know, solid enough. But in this playoff series, he's nearly like, you know, the 2020 version of what Lou Williams was last year in terms of he is kind of coming in that second rotation, but he's finishing games down the stretch. And really, I think I was saying there earlier, if you were to pick one player guaranteed to get you a layup in a game with LeBron James, if I was to pick a second player, it'd be Goran Dragic.
Yeah, I was watching the highlights of last night's game and he made some incredible layups, like high off the backboard over a big center. It was just incredible.
Yeah, and towards the end of that game then he made two big kind of late three-pointers to kind of keep the gap open. I think that's where you start the conversation for me in this series so far anyway, how impressed he's been. Anything else Miami related you want to fawn over?
Well, I was watching the highlights. I knew you were in trouble when Kelly Olynyk hit a fadeaway banked three-pointer over defender with the shot clock expiring. I knew you were going to be struggling from that moment on, but Butler didn't have a good shooting night last night, and they, you know, they are the ultimate team in the sense that, you know, Goran Dragic was by far the highest scoring player and he only had 25 points. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't a case where he had 35 or 40, like Jamal Murray had 40, and you know, I mean, they just, you know, Duncan Robertson went 6 from 12 from 3-point range. He had 5 three-pointers made in the first like 2.5 quarters. Like, but what I liked about Butler actually was it didn't have a good shooting night, but he didn't. There was no sulking. There was no, which he's been previous to do with his attitude sometimes. But there was no like, oh, you know, I'm the superstar on this team and I'm not doing well. His defense was incredible in that fourth quarter. He made some incredible steals and kept the ball alive. Made two massive clutch free throws at the end, and then also had the intercept on the lob pass for the alley-oop. Committed fully to that, and he's just like, as I said again with the Clippers, who's the leader? Jimmy Butler is by far the leader on this team, and it's obvious when you watch a game. You know, I mean, he knows that fourth quarter tends to be his time, but it still didn't work for him last night shooting wise. But he still made some big shots when he had to, made two big free throws to keep the Celtics at a distance. He is, but the leader of that team, and it shows. And I thought he was incredible mentally last night. Bam Adebayo, I can never pronounce that. Adebayo. Yeah. Incredible. Just incredible. He last night, I mean, I have it here. What did he shoot? He shot like 10 from 16 from the field or something like that. 9 of them had to be alley-oop lobs. That's all, like, that's what they were doing. He's a pick and roll threat. He is incredibly dangerous because he's so athletic and he's so big. He's just rolling to the rim at ease, and Celtics can't really stop it. And that's a dangerous thing going forward. If that simple move basically opens up your entire defense, you're going to be struggling. But he just seems to be, I don't know, players go through this sometimes where he's in the right spot at the right time a few times. I've seen a couple of balls deflect right into his lap and he lays it back up. But look, that's going to happen occasionally, and then it's not going to happen for you some other times. But the Heat and Eric Spoelstra, again, absolutely credit to Eric Spoelstra, you know, as a coach, kind of during the LeBron era, didn't really get the shine he deserved because it was a LeBron team and everyone thinks LeBron's coaching. But my God, he is, you know, from when he started to now, that's quite the run that they've had.
Yeah.
Very few bad years. And, you know, Celtics.
Rightfully deserved.
Yeah, exactly. Celtics, I thought Cantor should have got more minutes coming off
the bench. I actually feel the opposite way. I don't know why. There's something about Enes Kanter that he's kind of like the, I wouldn't even say the X Factor is probably a bit too of a high of a title for him. I would say probably the shit the bed player of the game. Maybe he can, you know, he obviously has positives and stuff like that. But I felt, you know, it's similar to Portland in their playoff run last year. When he's defending the pick and roll, or even just switched onto a guard, and I noticed a number of times as well when the Heat got baskets in that game too, that Cantor was at fault defensively, and then not owning up to it, he was giving out to other players on the court. And I was kind of like, Jesus Christ, like, take this man out again. But I know what you mean in terms of, if you look, you know, if he can shore up his defense when it comes to the rebounds. You know, which, you know, in game one anyway, I know the Celtics gave away some bad rebounds. When it comes to the rebounds, and when it comes to even just that bit of offensive kind of output, you know, Cantor is one of the best centers in the league. You know, so I can see your point.
Yeah, again, I've seen the highlights of it, but he was doing whatever he wanted down the paint. Like, he was double teamed one time. I don't know by who. I think it could have been Marcus Smart and someone else, but they were much smaller than him. But he just it was like they weren't even there. He just kind of ducked under and up he went. But I know what you mean. Defensively, he is liability, and it's unfortunate because, like, going forward, he is incredible. So even if he becomes competent on the defensive side, he doesn't have to become a stopper by any means, but just don't do anything stupid, and he would he'd be a starting big man on loads of teams because he's that good going forward. But it's, yeah, I know what you mean. I just, because I saw the highlights in the second quarter, I think he came in and he went three, or it could have been the end of the first quarter, he was 3 from 3 in like the space of a couple of minutes, and I was just like, he's doing, like, no one's stopping him at the moment. So, but I know
there's definitely lineups that he can play effectively in, and I think it's a sign that Brad Stevens is panicking, I think, because there's, well, in that second game early, I think it was, could have been in the first or second quarter, they also brought in Romeo Langford, who had barely really played any solid minutes for them so far in this playoffs. And, you know, that's a sign that Brad Stevens is thinking, look, our current system is not working. We need to bring in some new lads and inject some bit of life. And Toronto kind of did the same a bit when they were playing the likes of Matt Thomas, their three-point shooter, as well during that series. That was kind of a sign of, oh, well, this guy's not in the usual rotation. We need to try to change things up a bit. So, you know, it is a good kind of healthy thing for him to do, but also a little bit worrying as a Celtics fan that our strongest lineup, I suppose you could say, isn't getting the job done.
Yeah, and like, Celtics didn't play bad. Like, Kemba was amazing. But I was surprised to see, I was looking at the box score, he was, you know, his plus minus was like -9, I think. I think that's sort of an outlier just because of, like, the third quarter was the killer for the Celtics, basically. I think they were outscored by 20 points in that third quarter. But he hit some big shots, like, he looked good. Like, Tatum and Brown got you both, like, in the 20s, I think, scoring wise. You know, there's a lot of situations here where Celtics could be up 2-0 here. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those kind of series. So I wouldn't be despondent if I was a Celtics fan because of the fact that they're so evenly matched. This could be, I'm hoping this is a 7-game series just because it'll be fun to, you know, watch. But I wouldn't be despondent. What I would be worried about is the fact that Butler didn't have a great game last night and you still lost. And the Celtics played pretty well. That's the only issue I would have. Mm. But at the same time, you know, the first game, that Bam play was just one of those plays, you know, that'll be replayed and rewatched for years and years to come. You know what I mean? It's just one of those plays that happens. You know, if Tatum had made that dunk, it's the same thing. It would have been one of those replays we would have seen over and over again for years and years to come. Like, that's how good the dunk would have been. Yeah. So,
No, maybe it's worth bringing up Jason Tatum, actually, because sometimes you kind of overlook. You think of the Heat, you think of Butler, you think of the Lakers, you think of LeBron. You know, Jason Tatum is this player for the Boston Celtics. And, you know, I think, you know, he's standing out a little bit more for me in this series than he has so far in the playoffs. I felt he's been a little bit quiet, but I feel he is fairly locked in for this series. But I was trying to kind of figure out, you know, Tatum's looking good. He's getting, you know, they're giving him the ball down the stretch, which is what you want to see, especially as a Celtics fan. But I think what the reason maybe he's not coming across with, you know, bigger point games is maybe it's the defense, because Jimmy Butler has been the kind of primary assignment for defending Tatum. And as you mentioned, Butler's defense has been great in this series. And, you know, just a point, not to be fawning over defense in all these series now, pure I don't know, I feel like that's a real how would you describe it, a hipster thing to start talking about how good the defense is. But just if you look at the rotation that the Heat have in terms of their wing defense, because a lot of people call the Celtics a very strong wing team because of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and unfortunately Gordon Hayward, who we might see in this series. I don't know where his status is, but you know, he's another wing that you add into the fold. But when it comes to the wing defense, you've got Andre Iguodala, you've got Jay Crowder, you've also got Bam Adebayo that can switch onto wings. You've got Jimmy Butler. I mean, you've got the creme de la creme almost of a rotation of wing defenders that are doing a great job in this series.
They are. They're a long team. Like, and I would consider Celtics a long team in a lot of ways too. But when you're matched up against it's just a bad matchup in a lot of ways for the Celtics. Do you know what I mean? You bring up Hayward. I nearly forgot he was on the team. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not sad enough to see, because he's, you know, he's an all-star. I'm not sure if he made an all-NBA team with Utah, but he wasn't far off it if he didn't. The horrific injury, and he just hasn't seemed to be the same player since. So it's sad. But, you know, he could still come in and make an impact. Hopefully he will. But, yeah, I, as I said, I wouldn't panic yet. If you go 3-0 down, obviously, then I would start panicking. that's when I would start definitely hitting the panic button. But until then, no, I think... Yeah, Brad Stevens is a good coach. You know, he's got a day and a half now to really sit down and say, look, this isn't working. Let's figure it out and let's throw something different at them and going forward. But yeah, I think so. There's some positives there for you, Johnny, I think.
There is, because I think, you know, to kind of predict what might happen in this series, like, you know, I wouldn't be too upset if we do end up losing this in 4 or 5 or whatever it ends up being, because at the end of the day, we have the same core people on contract for next year. We've a good kind of rookie rotation as well. When you look at Grant Edwards coming in there or Grant Williams, coming in there. Carson Edwards hasn't featured in this, but you know, it's one for the future. A couple of players, because we had a lot of draft picks from trades over the last couple of years, so that's, you know, good for the future. But when you look at the Heat, I mean, it just seems like this is the team this year with the momentum. This is the Toronto Raptors of 2020 that, you know, are defying the odds. And I know the Nuggets have, you know, historically been the underdog team. But, you know, the Heat, you know, who would have said, you know, even during the regular season, that this team would have gone on this run? It just seems like they have the momentum, they have the spark in them. And, you know, for that reason, I think it's just unfortunate that the Celtics have fallen into this, because I think if they're in the West Conference, a lot of people argue that the West is a lot stronger. I feel like these Eastern Conference games have been far, far better.
Yeah, the Eastern Conference definitely got overlooked a good few times during this year, because the West obviously is stacked. Like, but the Eastern Conference, the Gulf was always a bit wider years and years ago. Now it's not as big. Like, Heat is just a well-oiled machine, and they know what they have to do, and they know, you know, how many games have they lost in this playoffs?
They're 10-1, I think.
10-1, like, that's historic numbers. Yeah. That's like the three-peating Lakers and Bulls numbers. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's how good that is. It's incredible. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. We'll touch base next week, hopefully with more success from your Celtics, and we can preview a final. But Johnny, as always, appreciate you coming on, and we will do this again soon.
Perfect. Thanks, Stephen.
No worries, but have a good one.